Catherine Vilsteke, along with her colleague Hannah Filippo, have made a film about gay refugees. Well, perhaps refugees is too strong a word for all of the people featured in their documentary, but certainly all four stories captured in this film involve gay, lesbian or transgender folk who've left home for Europe in order to be truer to themselves. Silent Stories, that's the name of the film, features the lives of Erezgi from Algeria, Sarah from Iraq, Jean-Louis from Senegal and Rabito from Guinea. Most of the film, though, is shot in Belgium. If you'd like to check out its website, you can go to ours, which is radionz.co.nz/nights. Catherine Vilsteke joins me now on the phone from Brussels. Welcome to Nights, Catherine.
Hello.
How did you meet these four people?
Well, not exactly in the same way. I actually got to know Erezgi first, because before doing this documentary, which was the first documentary we ever made, I did a book on gays from Morocco and North Africa. And he was one of those people who had just arrived in Brussels when I met him, and who immediately said, oh, I want to tell my story. I'd be very much interested in being in that book. And gradually, because that book was published in 2008 and was called Among Men, and so gradually we became very good friends. And when we came up with this idea of making a documentary, he again said, oh, I want to be in it, because I'm sure that in 10 years' time, I'll be very happy to have a sort of document which shows how I was when I just got to Europe. And so his story was a bit particular, and the transsexual from Iraq was someone I had met through interviews which I did for the newspaper for which I've been working for the last 20 years. And that was because, well, I'd been reading that there'd been quite a lot of prosecution of gays and transgenders in Iraq. And so we went to Holland and came to these three, there was Sarah and two others who told their stories. And like a month later, when we were still looking for people to participate in the movie, I was thinking maybe I should get back to them and ask what they think about it. And they were absolutely very positive about it, because of course, as in Holland, they had been put away, actually, in a center for people to be sent back to their countries. They did hope that participating in a documentary would change their perspective, and that would get them eventually papers and a possibility to stay on, which, I mean, more than a year later, indeed turned out to have been the case. And then we still have Jean-Louis and Rabiatou. We met them through several of the organizations that are active here in Brussels and which try to accommodate non-Western gays and lesbians. And so we actually screened quite a few people, because we were very much afraid that if you decide to really choose someone as a character for your documentary, you have to be absolutely sure that the stories being told are true and that it's not a setup just meant to get political asylum. And so through all these people that we screened, we thought that those two were, the right match, I would say.
Rabiatou is the one who appears to be in the greatest danger, though. At least in the story she tells, I thought she was a bit lucky to survive. Well, at least the story of her father saying when she's found, her uncle finds her, I think, in a flat with another woman and takes her to her father. And he says to the uncle, why didn't you kill her? She doesn't deserve to live. Which is one of the more affecting parts of the movie, I thought, for me.
Yes, my favorite line in the entire documentary is also a line by her, in which she says, God makes people for paradise and he makes others for hell. That's how it is. It is your destiny and you cannot escape from it. Indeed, you could very much see from Rabiatou and West Africa, she's from Guinea, that the whole way of looking at lesbianism, at being gay, is entirely different from the way we look at it, in the sense that it's totally unacceptable. And it's such a shame that, indeed, as her father says, someone who's like that does not deserve to live. I think another thing that makes Rabiatou's testimony quite touching and well, tragic in a way, is also that Rabiatou is one of the two characters that are not very well educated, and so who in a way still has problems dealing with the fact of being lesbian herself. And we did think it was very important that we did not just get intellectuals, because that's, I think, a bit of a thing to be, I mean, to really take care of, is that you quite easily fall into a situation where you have four intellectuals babbling away.
That's right, and they're all going to be good talkers. They're all going to be confident in front of the camera, but yeah, it's not the whole spectrum of life, is it?
Exactly, and so I mean, amongst gay people, you just as well have non-educated women and men as you would have amongst the straight population. So we did think that was very important, especially also because it reflects the whole view of man, the whole view of the community. And indeed, Rabiatou, in a way, she also thought that, well, the fact that she was not cured from being a lesbian was because the purification rituals that had been done upon her after her being found out had not taken long enough. And so in the beginning she was in Belgium, she said, well, I'm sure that had I been able to continue that purification, I probably would have come out straight again. So that shows also her own way of looking at her sexual identity,
yeah,
which is very far from, yes, what you and I would think normal.
Well, does she still think that she is in hell, that she's destined for hell, that her living life now is a hell and that's the way it's meant to be?
Well, I think the one thing that has really helped her a lot and that has brightened up her actual life and also her prospect for the future is the fact that she managed to go to school again, and that, as you can see in the movie as well, that she's doing very well taking care of elderly people, and she's so much appreciated there that it sort of gives her a new leash on life. And I'm sure that, well, she didn't talk to any of her co-students about the fact that she actually fled her country because of being gay. I think she came up with a story about having been married off to an old man, a thing like that. And I'm still not sure whether she would want anyone from her own country to know about her sexual identity. But I do think that this these studies, these possibility of being someone, of being useful to society, has really changed her view of herself and also her position in the society as a whole.
Does she have a girlfriend in Belgium?
I don't think so.
You mentioned that she felt perhaps the purification process, i.e. this process of curing her of her lesbian sexuality, was still to take effect, which makes me wonder then why she chose to leave Guinea. If she wanted to become straight, she could have stayed there.
Well, I think she couldn't live with the idea of being married off to this old man, of being unfree and actually being sort of like in a prison almost. And I think in a way things are very double. She At first, she really wanted to leave because she saw no other possibility than that to have an acceptable life. Then when she first got here, I think she really went through this whole phase of, my goodness, what did I do now? I don't know anything here. There's everything is different. Fortunately, she did speak some French, so that was a start. And then gradually, she is now, I think, coming to terms. And she does have some acquaintances among lesbians, and that does help. As she says in the movie, before arriving in Belgium, she didn't even know it was an option. She thought that what she was feeling was sort of abnormal and to be banned in any case.
One of the things that struck me about all of them was that they seemed religious. In other words, they all made religious references or talked about God in some way. And some remained devoutly religious, Jean-Louis in particular. Yet they've been rejected in many ways by that religion that they follow.
Indeed, that's one of the things which many Westerners find very peculiar. How is it possible that a religion or a god that doesn't want you can still be so important? I mean, I think it's the explanation is quite simple. For all of them, religion is very much a part of identity. I think you could even say it's the most determining component of identity. And so we cannot so easily sort of cut out part of our identity. So whether we like it or not, this religious factor is there. And indeed, it also has nothing to do with being well or not well educated. I mean, Jean-Louis is very well educated, is in contrast to Rabiatou, not having any problem with his whole coming in, coming out. He knows who he is. He used to be an activist. For him, there is no such problem as to himself about being gay. But indeed, coming from a world, he's a Senegalese Christian, a minority in Senegal, but coming from a world where prayer has been part of your life on a daily basis since you were a small child, means you cannot just get rid of that, because, I mean, it's one of the building stones of who you are. So that's why, even though he comes across a priest who says, well, you can do this and this and this prayer, but before all, you should stop being gay, and then you're most welcome again. I mean, I think he loathes that priest for saying that. And I think also for himself, he came to terms with his religion, in the sense that he now says, it's between me and God, and actually no other man is supposed to deal with that. If I can talk to God, and if I can make God understand, then all the others have nothing to do with that.
Nights on Radio New Zealand National, I'm speaking to Catherine Vilsteker about the movie she held to make called Silent Stories, about gay and lesbian and transgender men and women who left Africa and Iraq to live in Europe. Another big theme that comes through in the movie is separation from and rejection by your family. Now, probably Rabbi Beatou's is the most powerful, her statement from her father. But Jean-Louis also, he's got a son back in Senegal, hasn't he?
Yes. And I think for him, that was one of the most, or that still is, one of the most painful aspects of being here. The fact, namely, that indeed he got married when he was very young, as he was supposed to. I mean, as most gay men would have to marry at a certain point. Got a child who is now already a teenager, and of whom, I mean, of course, he never spent enormous time with him, because the child was living with the mother from whom he had separated quite a while ago. But still, now it feels as if this son is out of reach. And he knows that his son is still living in Senegal, and so living in a very homophobic environment. And I think one of the things that he fears the most is what will his son think of him? Will he, yes or no, reject him as an unacceptable creature, as a monster in a way? And of course, I mean, for the first year when someone has obtained political asylum, it is quite easy to make family members, I mean, direct family members such as children, join them in Belgium or in the country where someone has got political asylum. Still, that didn't happen, actually not because of Belgian authorities, but because of family members who were actually reluctant about providing a passport. They were saying, yes, we went to ask for the passport, but it's not ready. He can't get one. And the sad story behind that is that actually, as long as his son is in Senegal, living with a relative of Jean-Louis, it means that Jean-Louis will have to be sending money for his upbringing, and making his son come to Belgium would sort of mean the end of a trickle of money. And so he himself fears that they're reluctant to let him go just because that would be a source of income which would be drying up.
Has he told his son he's gay?
No. He wants to wait with that until the child is here, knowing very well that, I mean, if he now talks to him, the child is living indeed in a very homophobic environment where nobody would say, well, that's all right. Whereas if he'd first come here, he could see that it's not a problem. It's not a crime. It's no abnormal phenomenon. It's not a sin. I mean, as the entire society and the whole mentality is different. Indeed, I'm sure it would be much easier to talk about a thing like that to him here than it would be in Senegal. So I understand his waiting.
You shot the movie in, well, at least the European part of it, in winter, it seemed to me. And was that just because that was the time you were making the movie, or was that a deliberate choice?
I think it was both. It was the time when we were making the movie, but it was also because, I mean, even in winter you get very sunny days sometimes, and we did opt for using this harshness of the environment of you see, for example, Sarah and her friend. It's always raining, and it's always sort of greyish and very unaccommodating, I would say, the climate. Because for them, it's also one of these things which they find very, very, very difficult to adjust to. All these people, all four, are coming from countries that have, hot climates and which have long stretches of blue skies. I mean, which have hot summers, have quite a better climate than we have. And so getting used to the grayness is one of the things which are difficult. Areski said, I'm not sure whether I'll ever get used to this lack of light in this country. And yes, I can imagine so. And even for us who were born here, at times it's quite hard.
Catherine, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
That's Catherine Vuursteker, co-maker of Silent Stories, about the lives of four gay and transgender migrants from Africa and Iraq who've chosen to move to Europe rather than hide their sexuality at home. Now, it's touring New Zealand as part of the Outtakes Gay Film Festival.